Welcome in to a Wednesday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We are talking Kenneth Faried getting arrested in the Hamptons, a couple of training camp invites for the Brooklyn Nets, and then answering the questions you posted on Reddit that you didn't ask us. All that and more next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are listening to Locked On Nets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We've told you five times already, so we hope you've gotten it through your head. Also, before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone, tomorrow is the debut of the Locked On Podcast Network's college section. 10 colleges debuting, including Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee, Florida, Kentucky, Oklahoma, shout out, Baylor, Penn State, Oregon, and BYU. You can find all those podcasts anywhere you get your podcasts tomorrow, unless you listen off a homeless guy's phone and he doesn't have the right apps downloaded. But I don't know why you would do that. So you should be able to get it tomorrow on the Locked On Podcast Network. Anyways, you are listening to Locked On Nets. I am Gavin Schull. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, I moved back to my native New York to cover your Brooklyn Nets. And I am joined by the one, the only, Josh Bass. And Josh, our guy, new Brooklyn Net, Kenneth Faried, coming from the weed capital of America, gets arrested in Bridgehampton on Sunday morning and charged with possession after being pulled over at a sobriety checkpoint. And now I don't really expect anything to come out of this, but still obviously not great news if you're a Nets fan.
I mean, not great news, but at the same time, like...
Not great, Josh. Not great.
Yeah, listen.
Josh, there are laws for a reason.
I'm not going to fault Kenneth too much. I feel like this is a classic Stephen A. moment. Stay off the weed. but listen, I can't get super mad over this. I mean, guys have different needs. Who am I to kind of say what should be mandated or not from the recreational drug perspective? So, listen, I'll let him have it. I'll let him slide there. And as long as it's nothing serious, then he's good to go in my book.
Josh, this guy makes $14 million a year. The kids look up to him, and he is in the Hamptons, I believe, doing a charity event there, and he has the nerve to have 2 ounces of marijuana weed on his person.
Marijuana, cannabis, weed.
In the back seat of a car at a sobriety checkpoint. And you know what really galls me? It's that the police were just doing their job, and they definitely would have pulled over a white person too. That's what really makes me upset, Josh. That's why I get angry about stuff like this. And Kenneth...
And for anyone that doesn't know Gavin super well, he's not being facetious at all. That's his exact opinion on this.
Yeah, it's true.
Can't wait till you get flamed on Twitter.
Yeah, I deserve it if I really did help hold those beliefs. Yeah, I don't know. We probably shouldn't go too far down this rabbit hole, but I'm pretty sure they just changed the law in New York City, and I believe in New York City, where you don't get arrested for possession of weed if it's in the amount that Kenneth Faried had, and suddenly you go to the Hamptons. It's a crime. He has to go to jail. $500 bail.
Subpar Hampton also, south.
Mm. Yeah, Josh, you're going to the Hamptons this weekend. What are we looking at? What was he doing? Maybe he's just driving. I guess he might have just been driving through that part. He could have been heading back to the city, theoretically.
But. Yeah, I'm sure he was driving back to the city, just going through a checkpoint. Yeah, and I'll be in the Hamptons this weekend, so should I sniff around the area and kind of see what the deal is with the local fuzz?
Yeah. Okay. All right, now I appreciate it. I would genuinely like you to do that. All right, that's all we have on Kenneth Faried. I couldn't get that much out of the... conservative asshole bit, so we will wrap it up there for segment number one. And coming up next on the Locked On Nets podcast, we are going to be talking training camp invites, 2 new names to add to the list. That next on the Locked On Nets podcast. Back on the Locked On Nets podcast, 2 new names to add to the training camp invite list. Obviously, we already had North Carolina mediocre Theo Pinson invited to training camp, and now you can officially add Jordan McLaughlin, point guard out of USC who played for the Nets Summer League team, and then an Australian superstar named Mitch Creek. We are up Mitch's Creek, Josh. He's 26 years old. He's played the last 8 seasons internationally for both Adelaide, I wanted to get friend of the show, and Aussie native James Gow on for an opinion on him. Maybe we'll do that later in the summer. So he played for Adelaide of the Australian National Basketball League from 2010 to 2018, and then he finished up last season with, excuse my pronunciation here because I didn't research it, BG Göttingen of the, and that's definitely wrong, of the German Basketball League. Overall, appeared in 200 games for Adelaide. Last season in Adelaide, made all NBL, that's the National Basketball League over there, second team, and he took his Adelaide team to the finals of the NBL playoffs, averaging 15 points, 1.2 steals, 6 rebounds, and he was fourth on his team in assists, averaging just over 2.5 per game. Obviously, I don't necessarily expect either of these guys to make the roster, but it's always good to have depth, like we saw last year with all the injuries at point guard. Like someone like Jordan McLaughlin, like could theoretically get called up midseason and play in maybe 20 minutes in a game here or there. So it's interesting to see what they can get out of these guys.
Yeah, and also I'm looking at Mitch Creek's, or should I call Mitchell Creek to be more formal?
Yeah, of course.
Possibly. But looking at his Wikipedia page now, and for the personal section, it just says, off the court, Creek is a qualified personal trainer. That's it.
I mean,
but you're looking to bulk up. Maybe you could hit up Mitch.
I will, actually. I'm gonna contact him if we get invited to Nets Media Day this year, which I wouldn't say is likely, but we will ask. So that's something. I will approach him and say, hey, are you willing to train me? And then he's like, nah, that's another Mitch. People keep asking me, mate. And I'll be like, oh man, your Australian accent is terrible. And he'll be like, I know, because you're doing it. So Mitch Creek, interesting. I don't know. A lot of people seem to like him. I know he's really a fan favorite in Australia. He's on their national team, which is obviously one of the best in the world. So he's certainly played in some high-level games in the past. McLaughlin, a guy who I mentioned when we were discussing the Summer League roster, a guy I got to watch quite a few times in person during my time at Arizona State. And he's just really a brilliant floor general. He was, I think, one of 3 players in Pac-12 history to finish their career with over 1,600 points and 700 assists, of 8 assists a game last year, one of the highest marks in the nation. And I like the fact, and obviously this is part of this is just him being a senior and maybe being more physically mature than other guys he was going against, but the fact that he averaged 4 rebounds, 2 steals a game shows a level of activity. That's pretty nice overall. He's really intelligent. I feel like he's the type of player you could throw out there, and he's not going to mess things up. I would say his NBA comp, maybe a little bit of upside projection here, is someone like Shane Larkin, but I really think he could as far as break in case of emergency options goes, he wouldn't be a total disaster playing next season.
Yeah, he would be a total disaster, but I think with a player like him who is very solid at his position, it's always good to have those guys, but I feel like a lot of teams like the Celtics and Warriors are just taking flyers on guys who have more positional versatility. So any just like 6'7", 6'8", swingman that can shoot the 3 a little bit. And the Nets going for a guy in McLaughlin who's a good player, but he's never going to be anything but like a breaking case of emergency point guard. And they already have 3 of those, their deepest position. So is there any sense to kind of going for those more boomer bust wing prospects as opposed to a solid point guard? Because there is saturation at that position.
Yeah, you know, I think you make a valid point. I also think the Nets are theoretically pretty deep on the wing. And like, again, like it's not obviously if things go right, like Jordan McLaughlin and Mitchell Creek will never play a game for them. So I don't know. I think I see what you're saying. And like, it makes sense to keep taking shots on those guys. And obviously that's kind of what the Sixers did for the extent of the process. And they ended up with a guy in Robert Covington, who, despite not playing particularly well in last year's playoffs, is incredibly valuable, particularly at his contract. So you're probably right long-term, but I mean, they took 2 wings in the draft. Like I think if they like McLaughlin as a developmental point guard and they see him as someone who could end up being like a Shane Larkin type, even 2-3 years down the road, I don't necessarily think it is a terrible investment.
I don't really see the Shane Larkin because he's less about kind of getting into the lane like Larkin is, who uses his quickness really well, and more of a true pick and roll player. I actually see him more as like a Steve Blake guy, like pretty steady, good 3-point shooter, good passer, solid positional defender as well. I'm not really going to take anything off the table, but also not a dynamic guy that's going to win you games.
No, that's
best case scenario for him.
That's 100% fair. He's definitely a creative finisher, and he can really shoot the basketball. Like I don't know. I could see him being a solid NBA contributor. I am watching Mitch Creek highlights while we do this, and I kind of like his game. He has some very athletic layups. His footwork is fundamentally sound. He's a good passer. I don't know. I'm getting really excited. I think Mitch Creek could really change the Nets' future. All right, again, we are in peak off-season form, so excuse the topic of conversation. But maybe you want to touch quickly on Theo Pinson. I know he was a guy like I was a little bit excited about when the Nets signed him. Obviously, like the big rap on him in college was that if he could ever develop a three-point shot, like he was someone who could have theoretically been a first-round pick. But then he stays at Carolina for I believe all 4 years. It might have only been three. And he just never turned into a shooter. So that's the big thing with him. But as a defender and as a transition player, I don't know. I think he's out of the three guys. Like if you told me one of them is going to be like in the Nets rotation 3 years down the road, like he's certainly the guy I would pick out of that group.
Yeah, I mean the thing with Pinson is that the 3-point shot, as you mentioned, was extremely suspect throughout college. It shot 26% from his career at UNC, but shot it really well in summer league. Had games where he was knocking down two or three threes per game. I think shot over 45% from three in summer league. Might have been higher than that. And his form looked good to me. So we'll see if he can carry that over. But he's a very good athlete. Has great tools. Also an exceptional passer. Averaged 5 assists a game his senior year, kind of playing that point forward role for Carolina. And it really is going to be if his shot can come around and be consistent, and also about his health, because he was banged up pretty much his entire career at UNC. I think is obviously that championship game against Gonzaga, he just couldn't hit anything because he had an injured wrist. So he's someone that health is going to be a huge thing to watch to see if he can eventually become a solid role player.
Yeah, no, I think he brings some of the same qualities that Rondae Hollis-Jefferson does, where obviously, I mean, maybe a little bit more upside as a three-point shooter if what we saw in summer league holds to form, but just a guy who makes a lot of winning plays. And I know that's kind of like a BS statement that gets thrown out there about a lot of players, but I mean, even that like Carolina team that won a title, like this sounds weird to say, but like in some ways they were at a talent deficit against Gonzaga. Like there wasn't really one surefire NBA player on that team. And the reason they advanced as far as they did, and they were as good as they were for the 4 years that he was there, was a lot of times Theo Pinson was willing to lock up the top guy on the other team, was willing to slide across the floor, made smart pass after smart pass. Like he's a guy who could really contribute to winning. So I'm interested to see if he becomes anything for the Nets.
Yeah, but I also think we need to temper expectations, because even though he was a key part of those teams, and by the way, I was wrong, it was his shoulder, not his wrist. He still was never really close to, I mean, I guess his senior year, he was maybe the third best player on that UNC team, but never someone who's really carrying them throughout the season and a go-to guy. He's always someone that was better in low usage and more of a glue guy at the college level even. So seeing how that would translate to the pros, who knows if he's even good enough to make a roster.
Yeah, for sure. And like I guess like the example of that type of player working in the NBA would be someone like Lance Thomas, which I know doesn't really give you
Let's
that
get excited.
Happy Woo! Feeling in your stomach, but hey, it's something. All right, that'll wrap up second segment, third and final one coming up. We are going to answer two questions we got on Twitter, neither of which were NBA related, and then three we got from Reddit that I just stole that were not directed at us, but I thought were interesting for a quick conversation. That next on the Locked On Nets podcast. All right, third and final segment on the Locked On Nets podcast. We didn't have a third segment today, so I just went on Twitter. I made a post. I said, does anyone have any questions for us? And we got two. One of them was from friend of the show, Brendan Baccarella, I believe.
Good pronunciation, yeah.
Thank you. All right, he asks, have J-Boss talk about his Barcelona classes, specifically the business class he hated so much? The floor is yours, Josh.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what he's referring to. I mean, there's a couple classes in that I took abroad where they really just try to torture the American students that are obviously when they're in another country, school isn't necessarily the thing that's top priority, like it obviously was for me. So some of my cohort wasn't at the same level as I was, and we had a couple of professors that would really try to, especially in those early morning classes, that would try to really come after you. So I think that might be what he was referring to. But
yeah, I'm just imagining
different schools in Barcelona. Right. I need to hit him up and talk with him about this.
Sort things out. Yeah, I'm just imagining you, like, walking to class, and they're like, all right, American students, you know what to do, and they, like, immediately put you in, like, one of those, like, medieval, like, stretching racks, and you're just, like, screaming in the back, yeah. Guys just, like, calmly teaching.
I blended in with the Spanish crowd when I was there.
Yeah, so. You were too busy staying off the weed to focus on school. All right, next question from Adam Gerloff, Will Smith's Instagram? I added the question mark, he didn't put it, he just wanted us to talk about Will Smith's Instagram. His five things on top are self-love, discipline, happiness, fault, failure. I didn't watch those. I did watch his first two videos. The first one is, I believe, from the movie I Am Legend, which I think is – I haven't seen enough Will Smith movies, but I would say is probably my favorite Will Smith movie. I like iRobot a lot.
7 Pounds guy?
I never saw. I like – the three I like are I Am Legend, iRobot and Hancock. Those are kind of my. I think those might be the only three I've like seen in full.
Hitch.
And I think I've. Fun fact: I've rode the jet ski from Hitch before.
I'm very happy I learned that. I don't know. Yeah. I'm actually a huge Will Smith fan.
You sure?
So yeah, it's. I don't know what to make of his Instagram. I'm still kind of perplexed by it and feeling it out. But he's a very talented guy.
Sure.
He's had a great career. I don't know. I feel like I want to like learn more about him because I feel like he's very open, but at the same time, pretty closed off. And like, you don't get to really have any depth inside of his personality.
Yeah, it's fun. It's almost like his kids like take some of the heat off him because like you just don't really hear that much about his life. And maybe that's just because he had like a family relatively quickly, and that's kind of always been like the story on him. But I don't know. I've been like, when was like the last like big movie? Like, I feel like I haven't seen him in anything in like.
Well, he did the one with Margot Robbie. And no, Concussion also.
Oh yeah, tell them. That was like 3 years ago already.
It was
like 2016 at the latest.
Suicide Squad also.
Oh yeah, but that's like
two movies.
I didn't even see it.
Aladdin and Gemini Man, which is him, Clive Owen.
Sure.
Solid squad there. Benedict Wong as well.
I guess my final takeaway is I highly recommend watching his newest video, which is. Like him, like being attacked by the dog in I Am Legend, and then like the video of like the guy in like the green screen suit with like a fake dog like attacking him and him making like a very dramatic face, and then there's a video of him in England that's pretty funny and like interacting with kids there. I don't know. It's all good stuff. He's just like, I don't know. He's just like
like a warm guy.
Exactly. He's like that magical like star quality that like you watch him doing something stupid and it kind of makes you happy. So shout out to Will Smith. All right. Rapid fire. All right. Three questions I took away from Reddit. Carry the Fire asks, not us, but he asks, why isn't RHJ considered a piece of the future? And this I just kind of took away from his question. Could he be a poor man's Iggy / Sean Marion? Let's focus on the first part, because the second part I kind of translated from what he was writing about.
Yeah, it's a good question, Carry the Fire, but I think really what it comes down to is that, especially the Sean Marion era, you needed, right as of now, compared to when Phoenix was really taking off, you need a four that can shoot and space the floor, especially when your five is going to be someone like Jared Allen, who as of yet isn't a consistent three-point shooter. He might get there, but... you can't bank on that. So having a guy like RJ at the four who brings a lot to the table, but isn't necessarily the most, he's not able to space the floor properly. It does really hamper your offense. So even though he does have a lot of positive traits and is a good mid-range game, pretty good defender, scrappy, solid rebounder, having that one weakness is going to put his future back a lot and makes him possibly expendable should the Nets have improvements in other areas. Guys like Jared Allen and Caris LeVert really emerge as those key pieces.
Yeah, I think you made a very relevant point on this a few podcasts back. Like, if the Nets theoretically land superstar talent or their current guys develop into superstar talent, Hollis Jefferson kind of, at least offensively, loses some of what makes him valuable, because what he turned into this year was a relatively efficient one-on-one player, particularly for someone who doesn't really shoot any three-pointers. Like, his ability to be efficient in the mid-range game, to get to the basket and finish, he was turning into a decent passer by the end of the season. I would say any comparisons to Iguodala and Sean Marion are both highly off base. He's never going to be close to the passer Iguodala is, or the, I guess, just athlete/defender that he is. And then Sean Marion, I think people, like, again, kind of in the same mold as Hollis Jefferson, though he did develop a three-pointer as time went on, and again, just in a different weight class in terms of talent. Like he was even at that time, like he was one of the few guys in the league who, like, few like non-bigs in the league that was able to be a superstar without a legitimate three-point shot. Hollis Jefferson, I don't think, is quite that good. I think if he develops a three-pointer, I think then you can start talking about him as a key piece of the Nets' future, just because of the versatility he brings on the defensive end and the type of person he is and the type of hustle he brings each and every game.
Yeah, no, completely agree. Still has a lot to work on, but you know, he is a good player. So I think that sometimes people discount the present and the value that people can provide just to kind of dream big about the future, when you really have to do, you have to kind of balance prioritizing the talent you have internally with the opportunity cost it's going to be to get additional talent. But let's move on here from Nets fan. I've noticed a lot of shade being thrown towards D'Angelo the past few weeks, and I just have never gotten it. Can someone who isn't that high on him explain why they don't like his game?
Josh, that's teed up for you.
Yeah, well, I'm assuming he's talking about D'Angelo Russell and not D'Angelo the rapper.
You could talk about both if you wanted, but yeah.
I like D'Angelo the rapper.
Okay, all right, go in on Russell then.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I think we both aren't super high on him, so you're throwing me the wolves here by letting me lead on this. But for my big thing with Russell is that he doesn't do anything at a super high level. So he's not a great three-point shooter. He really has never proven that in his career. He can't get to the basket or finish well. He's a terrible defender. He has good court vision, but he doesn't make those passes very often. So the ball does get stuck in his hands a lot, and he's a huge negative on offense when you kind of sum those things up. And kind of being a subpar athlete for the position, it's hard for him to really kind of make up for his good but not great skill level. So that's really why I'm not in on him as a franchise piece. Anything you want to add on that?
Yeah, I've said it a million times with Russell. I think two really essential things have to happen for him to be worthy of, I guess, the status the Nets place on him and someone that the Nets could consider resigning next season. That he really has to become ideally an elite three-point shooter if he wants to be elite as a player, but more realistically, a very good three-point shooter. And he just has to find a way to be average defensively, because right now he's a total train wreck on that end of the floor. If those two things can happen, I will reverse my opinion on Russell and really start to consider him one of the key building blocks of the Nets team. If he can't do those two things, or at least look like he's on track to develop those two skills in the near future, then I don't really see him being a part of this team long term. All right, unless you have any final thoughts, Josh, third and final question from John CBK. How do you feel about LeVert on the ball and Napier playing off when the backups are in? That's kind of how I pictured the Nets playing when those two guys are in. And I really like that as a strategy, because I think Napier as a secondary attacker with LeVert's ability to draw in a defense could really be deadly. And then, or even just not as an attacker, as a shooter, like he hit 37% of his threes last season. I think those two guys playing off each other could be really fruitful, because even though LeVert is obviously on the younger end and Napier, I guess, still youngish himself, I think they're two highly intelligent offensive players and with really varied skill sets. So I think those two are going to be a lot of fun to watch together, and going up against other backup guards, they're going to be highly effective.
Yeah, no, Napier is also 27, which is he's sneaky.
Wow, yeah,
like, I didn't realize. Up there. But no, it makes sense, because one, LeVert's more dynamic attacking the basket, and Napier is a better spot-up shooter at this point in his career than LeVert is. So you're putting both those players in their optimal fit within the flow of the offense. So kind of a no-brainer, and obviously they can do the other way also, because LeVert's a much better shooter off the catch than he is off the dribble. That's really something he needs to work on. His form off and kind of footwork off the dribble gets all messed up. So that's really one of his key takeaways this offseason, hopefully, to becoming a more complete player. So you can really have those two be interchangeable in the offense.
All right, I'm 100% with you. And that wraps up a brisk edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. We always say we strive to hit between 20 and 25 minutes. Before ads, we were going to do it. I guess with ads, we were going to be a little bit long. So we'll keep trying to get shorter for you guys, but we really appreciate you tuning in. We're going to be back, I think, at some point this weekend, and potentially with a special guest. That next on the Locked On Nets podcast.